Ready? Say I'm ready.
Ready.
Great. Okay, we covered your personal development library. Let's make these notes now on the five abilities in your personal development quest. The five abilities. First, develop the ability to absorb. Part of the challenge here is to, you know, try to get it all. You know, and taking notes and thinking about the notes you're taking. I know it's almost overload. I understand that, but Andy, you're doing a fantastic job. But the first key is to get it. You know, I teach the kids in school. I mentioned in one of these other seminars. Nothing worse than being stupid, so you got to gather up all the ideas you possibly can. You can sort through them later, discard what you're not going to use, refine, do whatever you want, but the first key is to get it, right? Nothing worse than being stupid. Being broke is bad, but being stupid is really bad. And what's really, really bad is being broke and stupid, right? You've already listened to the cassettes. Broke and stupid. That's about it. Unless you're ill. Sick. Sick, broke, and stupid. About as far as you can fall unless you're ugly. Yes, you got it. You've heard all that stuff. That's the ultimate negative life scenario. Ugly, sick, broke, and stupid. So here's the key. To get it in whatever form you can. You know, we get it by cassette. We get it by recordings. We get it by video. We get it by sermon. You know, we get it by lyrics from the songs, the dialogue in the movie. We get it from personal conversation. We get it from classes. We get it from seminars. Every possible way. The key is to get it and to absorb, to take in. Here's what else, not just ideas, but life itself. Your mind needs to be like a perpetual recorder, recording your life experiences. I've got a friend who's so good at this. He can read a 200-page book in 45 minutes. And then he can tell you about the book and make it more interesting than if you read it yourself. It's a gift to be able to get it, to see it, to have it affect you. It's marvelous. Better to have him go to Acapulco and come back and tell you about it than it is to go yourself. And here's why. If he goes, he won't miss anything. He'll see it all. He'll experience it all. Right? And then he's got this incredible gift of articulation and translation. When he comes back, he can tell you about it. To where you can feel the water lapping on your feet. You can smell the aroma of the food. You can see the color in the people. It's amazing. But first, in order to be able to translate, first you have to get it. So don't be lazy now in acquiring life experience, translated to consciousness, translated to ideas, put in your journal, put in your heart, put in your soul. Getting it, it's vitally important. Now here's the next ability, and that's to respond, to let it touch you, let it affect you, let happy things make you happy, let sad things make you sad. Because we need not only to be educated, we need to be impressed. Impressed. We need to be affected. We need to be moved. We need to be stirred. We need to be have to things to make an impression on our mind, on our soul, so that it lingers, so that it stays, so that it's available to use in communicating with other people. To absorb, let life touch you. Don't let it kill you, but let it touch you. Here's the third ability, and that's to reflect on it all. I call it run the tapes again. Go back over your experience to make it even more vivid, more powerful, make a bigger impression. Here's some good times to reflect. One, at the end of the day. Just take a few minutes to go back over the day. Maybe make a few notes. Keeping a journal is, you know, a little. Mine is part diary, part journal. If I was here today, I'd be taking notes. But I also use it, you know, who I've seen and where I've been, and I'm flying from Tokyo to Singapore. Just, you know, run the tapes again at the end of the day. Think back. Who did you meet and who did you see and what did they say and how did you feel? So that day now is more available, more valuable to you than just another day. At the end of the week, take a few hours at the end of the week just to reflect over the week. The experiences you had, the good ones and the bad ones, the highs and the lows. Part of the gift you can give to others is the gift of your experience if you remember it. If it's vivid, if it's powerful, if it's fresh, if it's unique, if it's vital, you can really affect other people with the relation of your own, relating your own experiences just because you weren't too lazy to live the experience and then reflect on it. Live another week and reflect on it. Take a half a day at the end of the month, reflecting over the month. What were the numbers? Some weren't good, some were good. The books you read, the books you heard about, relating your experiences at the end of the month. At the end of the year, take a weekend. Take some time reflecting. Here's the key to gather up the past and invest it in the future. Experience is like commodity. It's like coin. Experience is currency. It's more valuable than a dollar. It's more valuable than a million. Your experiences can affect other people's lives. Your experiences invested in your sales career, invested in your parenting career. Not being lazy and getting it, living it, getting it, responding to it, remembering it, gathering it. Now it becomes like a vast account from which to draw. It's powerful. When my father was about to turn 76, I remember telling him, "Papa, imagine gathering up the last 75 years and investing them in your 76th year. Think of what an investment you've got to put into the next year, year 76. 75 years you've got to put in year 76. See, that's a whole different attitude than I think I can hang on one more year. I mean, you just got to approach it with a whole new approach. I'm going to take all the stuff I've learned and be more conscious of having it near the surface, emotions and emotional experiences near the surface, so that they're available to invest in the next conversation, invest in helping someone else, and invest in your own thinking. You can revitalize your own thinking by going over past experiences, things that you've accomplished that you'd forgotten about, and say, hey, if I did that, why couldn't I do this? You refresh yourself by reviewing, going over the past, reflecting. In ancient times, they worked 6 years and took the seventh, or they worked 9 years and took the tenth. Guess what that 10th year was called? The sabbatical. Take time. Now, part of the sabbatical, I'm sure, was change of pace, and part of it was, you know, whatever. But here was part of the sabbatical, to go back over the previous years. And if we go back over the previous years by taking enough time, not just a couple of minutes, but take some time, make some notes, develop some working papers. No telling now how valuable the last nine could be if we reflect for a year. Now the next nine could be 2, 3, 4, 10 times more productive by taking this time and learning this skill. Time away is reflecting time. And you got to get away. That's what my motorhome is for. I got a little motorhome. And I throw my dirt bike on the back and head for the mountains to get away where there's no traffic lights. Ride the Jeep trails. Watch the sunset. Just to reflect and ponder and wonder. Somebody asked me the other day if I meditate. And I said, well, I don't know if my meditation is formal, but I do ponder. Ponder? I don't know how close that is. That's probably close. I wonder. I take hours to sometimes just wonder what life is all about and where I'm headed and what I've done and what I should be doing. I wonder about that. I wonder at the immensity of it all. They got these new pictures now with the new telescope off out into space, and it's unbelievable. And you wonder, awestruck. That's probably a form of meditation. I mull. Do you mull? Everybody should mull. It means something different in Australia, but I ponder, I wonder, I mull, I think. That's probably close to meditation. But it's good. It's very important to take that time away I now seek solitude for all my public life, for all the flying on the airplanes and all the seminars and all the speeches and all the stuff around the world. You can't imagine how much I value getting away, a bit of solitude, not forever, but for a while. I'm even putting a fax machine now in my motorhome so I can be away, but still be in touch. My new mode for the future is in touch and out of reach. I want him to say, yes, you can contact him, but you can't find him. For a while. Jesus, the master teacher, every once in a while would disappear. I said, where is he? He said, every once in a while, he just disappears. Not forever, but he just goes away. And that's not bad advice. Just go away for a while. Just get away. There's another interesting illustration that says every once in a while you should go to your closet. And you're not like a real closet, you know, but a closet sort of means where you not shut yourself in, but for a little while you shut everything out and you get away into a closet, into a place away from the hustle and the bustle and the traffic and the horns and the jet engines and all of the rest that's happening. And just get away and do some thinking and reflecting and pondering. What about the values of your life? Because some things are so constructive if you'll just give it some time. You look back and say, wow, I spent too much money and too much time on that. Right? I'm not going to let that happen again. That much money and that much time and this little value. So that's so helpful. Now, sometimes you get away with somebody, or you get away with your wife or your husband, or you get away with your whole family and ponder and talk over some things. But here's one. You got to remember this. Solitude. You got to spend some time alone. I think it's so constructive. It is so helpful to do your own private thinking. It's a good skill to learn. So we've got to learn to absorb, we've got to learn to respond, we've got to learn to reflect. Now here's the next one, learn to act. Now we've got to make all of this stuff useful. There's no use building a whole reservoir of this stuff if you don't use it. And it can be an inexhaustible supply available to use, but now you've got to use it. And if you don't, here's what you live. We call the get-by life. And it's okay to get by. You're not starving to death. Your kids have got clothes. But you may only be 1% toward the abundance you could have simply by being a little careless and not doing this stuff. But now we gather up this stuff, and now the key is to put it into action. We now spend this capital by investing it in labor so that it produces a better marriage, it produces friendship, it produces income, it produces fortune, it produces something tangible, builds a city, conquers disease, does something of value, creates a symphony, right? Enriches a community, you know, helps to relieve suffering. You know, whatever you can think of to use this stuff, now it must be put into activity because the stuff is an imponderable supply. But what if you had a $10 million bank account and all you wrote was $1 checks? Wouldn't people consider you a little strange? And the answer is yes, if you got a $10 million bank account. And you write a $1 check, and then you write another $1 check, just enough to get by and have something to eat and a place to get in out of the weather. But see, with a $10 million bank account, you should write a little larger check. So your experiences, if you reservoir it this way, if you treat it as incredible value, it's an unlimited supply. Now start writing some checks by investing it in activity. The time to act is when the emotion is high. Because here's a law that sets in if you're not careful, the law of diminishing intent. If you wait too long, what you intended to do just diminishes and diminishes with too much passage of time. So when you're inspired, employ that inspiration. When you've got an idea, employ it, put it to work. And you may not even finish it. And you may discard it after a while, but at least give it a chance to have a life of its own. Give it a chance. See if the seed won't grow into something unique by putting it to work, acting. Action translates the reservoir of experience into major human productivity if you'll use it wisely. So we absorb and we respond, we reflect and we act. Now here's the ultimate, and that is to share it all. What you want to make sure is that you have a life process that's giving you more than you personally need for yourself. One of the reasons for creating abundance is to be able to share. R.J. Letourneau, that built the big earth-moving machines way back in the early part of the century, R.J. Letourneau finally reached the point, which was one of his goals, and that was to give away 90% of his income. 90%. Somebody says, wow, 90%, that's an awful lot to give away. You should have seen the 10% that was left. But wouldn't that be something? To create such abundance, you could give away 90%? Here was Andrew Carnegie's goal, to spend the first half of his life earning money and to spend the last half of his life giving it all away. He was so inspired by that goal that the first half of his life he accumulated $400 million, which back then was a lot of money. Right? Not that much now, but back then, $400 million was a staggering fortune. Guess what he did the last half of his life? He gave it all away. See, that's the reason for producing, that's the reason for accumulating, is to have more than you need. All right? Somebody says, well, why produce more than you need? To enjoy this unbelievable adventure called the ability to bless others, the ability to give, and the ability to share. That's so important, to share. Now, here's what's important about sharing. It acts in your own self-interest. When you share, it isn't gone, really. It isn't. It's like the law that says, if you give, what? It doesn't say if you give, it's gone. Say, no. Here's what it really says. If you give, it's invested. Now, see, that's unique language. And what do you expect from an investment? A return. Of course you would expect a return from an investment. Why would you make the investment? It's to expect a return. But now here's the colossal part of it. Many times it returns multiplied. How does that work? Who cares how it works? We don't know how it works. You don't need to study it. All you need to know what? It works by making the investment of sharing. By sharing, many times the person who shares receives the greater benefit. Now, that's a bit in your own self-interest, but why not involve yourself in your own self-interest if everybody wins, if nobody loses? If you are the greatest benefactor, one of the greatest benefits of sharing with you this seminar these 2 days is for what I'm going to get out. Right? I should have paid to get in. For what I'm going to receive. Because here's what I do for 2 days. Struggle with the language. I struggle with another way to say it, another unique way to say it. Because if I can make it clear for you, it helps to what? Make it clear for me. If it rings a bell for you, it rings a bell for me. If I do my best to try to inspire you, guess what it does? It inspires me. If I say, try it, guess what I'm going to think? I should try it. So if you share, if you give, the person who gives probably receives a greater benefit. But since that's, I guess, the way it's meant to be, then just operate this and you will act highly in your own self-interest. Here's what else sharing does. Makes room for more when you give what you got. If this cup is full, can it hold anymore? If this cup is full, there's only one way for it to hold anymore, and that is to pour some out. So take what you've got, start pouring it out. You'll have room for more to be poured in. But why should we pour more in if there isn't any room? Say, no, just start pouring this out, and then this supply just keeps coming. As long as you keep pouring, it keeps coming. Right? As long as it's going out, it's going to be coming in. So if you give, you will receive. Let it flow through you. That kind of sharing, so valuable. Now, some people have got their cup turned upside down. I mean, there's nothing going in. Certainly nothing coming out. We share by language. We share by emotion. We share by experience. Here's one of the most important commodities to share is your time. A piece of your life force, your time. But if you will share, Life has this unique way of rewarding those who pass on and share those great benefits of ideas and experiences and emotions and stuff that comes your way. Pour it out on as many people as you can reach in your lifetime. Okay. Now here's the last subject under personal development. Lifestyle. When we talk about those five elements I wrote down earlier, one was philosophy, second was attitude, third was activity, the disciplines, the labor, fourth was measuring results to see if you're making progress, and five was lifestyle. Here's the greatest essence of life, and that's living well. Weaving a tapestry of life experiences. Let me borrow now from that seminar on lifestyle these words. What constitutes a good life? What is a good life? Because that's the highest essence of life, is to live a good life. Let me give you a pretty good list. Here's number one, productivity. You won't be happy if you don't produce. That's why the 6-1 was arranged, so that you spend the greater part of your life and your time producing a working day, produce an idea and make it fly, produce an enterprise and make it grow, produce a relationship and give it life, to produce, to create progress. You won't be happy if you don't produce. Work to do that. There's an ancient script that says, "The sleep of a laboring man is sweet." Someone who labors to produce with their hands, who works hard, that sleep is sweet. Not the sleep of a goof-off man. No, not the sleep of a drifting man. The sleep of a laboring man. Somebody who works, puts in the time and the effort and the work and the labor, whether you labor with your hands or labor with your voice or whatever you do, physical, spiritual, personal, that labor produces good sleep. So we must produce. But here's the rest of a good life. Next is friendship. The greatest support system in the world probably is friendship. And you've got to nourish your friendships. Don't lose contact. Keep in touch. We all have to work on that. Letting too much time go by between visits and conversation and telephone and letters. Personal contact. So that you keep alive this reservoir of goodwill in terms of friendship that can give you support when you really need it. Develop the support system. Good friends, those people who know all about you and still like you, right? Good friends. Next is your culture. America understands this probably better than any other country, the dynamics of culture. Especially the dynamics of multiculture. A single culture is dynamic, but when you put together multicultures like America, it can produce the most stunning results. It can produce the most incredible wealth, such as never been known to the world in 6,000 years, the wealth that has been created by multicultures working together, contributing to each other. What one lacks, the other one's got. What one got, the other one shares. What one doesn't have, the other one re-puts it in. What one doesn't know, the other one does know. And you put that all together, and it becomes a tapestry of investment second to none that produces a country that's unlike any in 6,000 years. There's been nothing like it. And part of it is this multicultural contribution. Mutual contribution of cultures. But now here's what's important to keep your culture alive so that it continues to make its dramatic contribution. Don't let the music die. Don't do like the Israelis did, you know, of years past, the Israelites. It said they hung their harps on the willow, went through a couple of bad experiences and refused to play the harps. Say, come on, get a life, get over it, right? Let's get the harps down off the willows and begin to play, because that's what made us rich. The music made us rich, and the poetry made us rich, and the songs made us rich, and the work ethic made us rich. The religious philosophy has made us rich. Let us engage in that. You know, let's awaken all of that stuff again so that we continue to be a great nation and a great people. We've got to remember that. Keep your culture alive so that it keeps making the contribution, the literature and the drama and the dance and the art and whatever other contribution, the ceremonies and the traditions. That's very important not to let that die. It's made America unique. You can't find an American. We came from everywhere else, except, right, the American Indian. And that's about it. Everybody else came here from somewhere. And fortunately, when they came, they brought their language. They brought their food. They brought their music. They brought the dynamics of their culture. That's what makes us unique. We're proud of being Japanese Americans and Mexican Americans and Chinese Americans and Italian Americans. We all came from somewhere, either one generation or a couple of generations or two or three back. I mean, we all came here from somewhere. Whether it's from, you know, we call the motherland England, where is a major part of our heritage, but it is so vital. A big part of it gave America its religious heritage. From England, we got God save the king. Some people are a little suspicious about this God stuff. It's part of our heritage. You know, we were not embarrassed to borrow the God save the king. We thought, hey, that's a good idea to reverence God. Now, some people in building a new country would have left the God thing out, but America didn't, which is good. In fact, in our Pledge of Allegiance, we made sure that it stayed. One nation under God. We don't mind saying that. Now, some countries wouldn't put the under God stuff in the deal, but America does, which I think is a good deal. We even put it, America's Declaration of Faith, on the money. Here's what it says on this $100 bill. In the $100 we trust. No. No. It says what? In God we trust. See, you don't even have to look. You know it's on the money. Every coin. I don't know of any other country that does this. Makes the national statement of faith so evident by putting it on every piece of money, every coin, and putting it in the Pledge of Allegiance. It's very important. Somebody says, well, they've thrown prayer out of the school. Well, put up the money. Just put up the money. When I travel around the world, people ask me, how come America does so well? And I say, read the money. I think that's part of it. Now, that's my personal belief. Everybody's entitled to their own belief. But I think that's personal belief is what's on the money. So I promised myself a long time ago that I was going to make a lot of money and spend a lot of it in cash around the world, saying, read the money, read the money. Interesting. Now, a lot of places, even in America, wouldn't put this up on the wall. In God we trust. But that's our diversity of belief, whether you're a believer or non-believer, God, not God. Everybody's welcome here to whatever belief they have because we believe in freedom of expression, freedom of the press, freedom of religion, freedom to worship, whatever is your persuasion. That's what has made us spectacular. Incredible. So culture. Now, here's what's next. Don't miss anything. In lifestyle, just don't neglect the experiences you can have. Some people watch too much television and they neglect all of the experiences they can have. There's a lake in Idaho called Lake Louie. You can drive within 2 miles, and then you got to get out of your car, put the little outboard motor on your back and your fishing pole, and you got to hike the last 2 miles. But when you get there, it is one of the most serene places in all of the world, undisturbed. And you put this little outboard motor on an old raft that's up there. You go putt, putt, putt out across, and the sun's just coming up about 6:15, and you cast out there for those rainbows. When one of those things hits your line, it is an ultimate high. One, you're about 5,000 feet up. That's a high. A mile high. That's one of the best kinds of high is a mile high. They fight you to the death, these rainbows. Big red stripe down the side, white underbelly, black on top. Amazing. See, you can't have that experience watching the Today Show. You've got to get up, what, about 4:30 in the morning. And that's what I'm asking you to do more often. Get up at 4:30 in the morning and go create for yourself more experiences. So jot this down. Life is not just the passing of time. Life is a collection of experiences, their frequency and their intensity. The frequency and the intensity of experiences. That's what life is all about, that collection. So don't get trapped into wasting time. Not that watching a television show isn't a waste of time. You know, there's plenty of good stuff, but don't use it as your only source of life experience. Don't miss the game. Don't miss the show. Don't miss the performance. Before my father died at age 93, if you would have called him at 10:30, 11 o'clock, he wouldn't be home. He's at the ball game. He's at the rodeo. He's at church. He's somewhere. Watching the kids play softball. He's somewhere. Every night. My parents taught that. Don't miss anything. Another experience. Another rich experience. Another time. Another time. Elgin Baylor played basketball 1 year in Caldwell, Idaho, where I graduated high school. Just 1 year, Elgin Baylor. My papa used to go see him every time he played. R.C. Owens, one of the great pass catchers of all time, played 1 year at the College of Idaho. My father went to see him every time he played. Even in a small little community, don't miss whatever comes to town. Don't miss, don't miss. Don't miss the movie. A movie's probably the greatest value in the world. Cost $60 million to make it, $6 to see it. Now, jot this down. If you live well, you will earn well. If you live well, it'll show in your face. If you live well, it'll show in the texture of your voice and your language. If you live well, you'll be attractive. And success is something you attract by becoming an attractive person. Work hard. We're going to talk about that tomorrow. Work hard, play hard. All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. One thing you don't want to be is dull. So in the time away from your labor, in the time away from your commercial obligations, your commercial work, engage in all of this stuff. Don't miss, don't miss. Collecting, collecting, every day, every week that's possible, collect. So that your experiences now infuse your commercial time, your working time, your selling time, your recruiting time, building an organization time, constructing an enterprise time. If you will do that, not postpone all of this till some later time, as soon as, but weave it in. That's what we call a good life. Next is spirituality. Whatever you believe, study, practice, teach. It doesn't matter what the religion is. It doesn't matter what the spiritual persuasion is. Be a student of it. Don't neglect its research. Don't neglect its study. Don't neglect its origins. Don't neglect the contribution it could make currently to your life and give your spirituality a chance now to infuse. You don't have to talk about it all the time. Just so that it affects, it has an unseen magical effect in your performance, in how you treat people, in everyday life. If you'll use all of that, and don't neglect it, but study it and practice it and teach it, I'm telling you, it will serve you well. Next, do all the things that make you unique. Shove taught me all of this about lifestyle. So that you can enjoy your own uniqueness, not to make it a display, but so that you can enjoy yourself. The great philosophy says, love your neighbor as you love yourself. Now, here's one of the ways to create unique self-love, and that's to make yourself unique to yourself. This doesn't have to be publicized. It doesn't have to go on television. It doesn't have to be displayed in a seminar. Just so you consciously know that you are doing the things that makes you unique, and it makes you unique because of what you do and the way you live and the way you speak. But the uniqueness is primarily appreciated by yourself. You can't believe what that does for your self-esteem. It's off the scale. And anybody can practice it. Shove taught me what the word tip meant. I didn't know. What do I know? I knew milk and cows. I didn't know tip. What does tip mean what? Tips means to ensure prompt service. So when should you give it? Shove said, up front. Now see, I didn't know that. I said, no, you know, good service, good tip, lousy service, lousy tip. Shove said, no, to ensure good service, if the occasion calls for it, up front. I learned how to do that. Shove said, you're taking a special friend out to lunch? This is a special occasion now. Special friend out to lunch? You call Mary over the waitress. Call Mary. Mary, arm around the shoulder. Mary, here's $10. Would you take special care of me and my friend? Shulf said, you won't believe what happens. He said, Mary will hover around your table. They know how to hover. But it takes $10 to get them to hover. Without that, in the middle of the meal, you're just saying, where's my waitress? She must be gone on a break. Say, no. And Shulf taught me, when the occasion is special, up front. I took a beautiful lady once to Trader Vic's in Beverly Hills. She was so surprised. When we got there, these two attendants come walking out. Hello, Mr. Roan. She says, wow. Opened up both doors, let us out. We went in, had this fabulous meal. And I said, okay, we're ready to go. We walk by, pay the bill, walk out. As soon as we walk through the door, my car is right there with the doors open and the motor's running. My lady friend said, I can't believe this. I said, hey, this is some place here. So we get in the car and we drive away. And we haven't gone but a couple of blocks. She says, Jim, hold it. You got to go back. I said, why? She said, with all of that service when we got there and then the car and then the doors, she said, you didn't tip anybody. We got to go back. I said, no, it'll be okay. She said, no, we got to go back. Then I had to tell her that I made a trip to Trader Vic's long before we went there, and I made sure that it all happened, right? If the occasion is special, right, learn to do the deals. Shulf taught me the smallest thing. Said, you get a shoe shine, and the shoe shine boy's done a great job. Now you got some change. Should I give him one quarter or two? Shulf said, always go for the higher amount, two quarters instead of one. Most people, one, you, two. Not to display to the world, but to yourself. Shulf said, this is a good note to make, become a two-quarter person. Now the amount has gone up since he taught me that. So. He said, if you just give one quarter, that'll affect you the rest of the day. One lousy quarter. And you look at your shine, if you go for the two quarters, he said, that'll affect you the rest of the day. Become a two-quarter person. I learned those simple little easy things. Okay. One time, my lady friend and I were heading for Carmel. We stop in the station. This kid comes dashing out, whistling and singing, said, how are you? Services the car, does all this stuff. Gives us the most unbelievable service. So I had said to him, we're about to head for Carmel. I said, where's the nearest Baskin-Robbins? We need an ice cream while we go. And he said, just right down here, just a couple of blocks. And he said, don't park out front. Your car might get hit. Park around by the side. I said, okay. Unbelievable service. So we walk into Baskin-Robbins, and instead of buying two milkshakes, we buy three. Go back to the station. And I drive up and he says, hey, I see you got your milkshakes. And I said, yes, and this one is for you. He said, for me? I said, yeah, all the service. When I drove away, I looked in the rearview mirror and he was like this. And I don't know what it cost back then. A dollar, a couple of dollars. It doesn't take much. Not to prove to somebody else, but for what it does of itself. For what it does for you, that you can honestly say, here's the person I am becoming. I now can respect myself for what I am becoming. I'm asking you to engage in that kind of lifestyle that creates for you this immense feeling of what you do. Not to be observed, but for what it does for your psyche and your consciousness and your soul. That kind of lifestyle. Okay. Let me introduce you now to communications, and then we're going to quit for the evening. Communications. I did a lecture not too long ago at Crystal Cathedral for a men's conference. In fact, another one's coming up, I think, next month. Here was the title of my lecture. Words have almost the power of God. Words have almost the power of God. I said, the Christian story says, in the beginning, God spoke and said, let there be light. And those words created light. Someone says, yes, God's words could create light. But here's the key. Human words can be almost as powerful. And here's what human words can create. Insight, which is light. The light of insight, not the light of the sun, but the light of the consciousness. And human words can do that. It's called the unseen magic. Let's say someone cannot see how they can possibly be successful, and you come along and tell them your testimonial, choosing the best words you can. And when you finish, here's what they say. Now I can see. Before you got here, I was blind. Before you got here, I was in the dark. Now that you've talked to me, I'm beginning to see. It's beginning to dawn on me. The lights are going on. Human beings have the unique ability by language. That's why you never want to be lazy in language. By language, we have the ability to unlock someone's consciousness and get them to see something they've never seen before. And this experience called insight can be the beginning of a career. It can be the beginning of an enterprise. It can be the beginning of a whole brand new life when the lights go on. It is so powerful. So I'm asking you to use your words that are so powerful. Use them in your business. Use them in your sales career. Use them in your parenting career. Use them in your daily life. And let the power of words affect people everywhere you go. Transform somebody's life. A new beginning for them to look into things that they've never seen before. I'm just asking you to do that. Words are that powerful. Develop a unique vocabulary that can reach anybody, whether it's a child or whether it's a teenager or whether it's a senior citizen or whether it's a business person or a person you meet on the street or the taxi driver. Learn to have a variety of language that can help people tell a unique story that makes someone laugh, tell a unique experience that causes people to smile, right? Give them a piece of your life by the language. It is the tools by which we take experience and transfer it from one person to another. Language can be the bridge that helps someone from the dark to the light, from skepticism to faith, from not knowing to knowing. You be the bridge by language to help people that are insecure to become secure, that can't see themselves as successful, and you can help them to see themselves better than they are before they can see it for themselves. If you will do that by your language, no telling what you can accomplish. It is so staggering. It's so extraordinary in its concept. And tomorrow, we're going to spend some time tomorrow morning talking about the art of persuasion. We're going to talk about affecting other people with language and words and what it'll do for your career and your life, your home life, your business life, and your family life, and all of the rest. Communication. It's a skill unmatched. I learned sales. Sales was the beginning of my new discovery of how powerful language was in affecting my income. Then I learned how powerful it was in affecting my whole life. And we'll talk about all of those phases and all of those possibilities when we get back together tomorrow. See you tomorrow.
This is the end of this disc. The program continues on the next CD.